With 1.5 million Canadians identifying as blind or having low vision, what will the future look like as we move to a world where using our eyes for screen time is at an all-time high? The BC Yukon Division of the Canadian Council of the Blind, or CCB, is a group run by the blind for the blind, where sports and recreation, technology training, and peer support are just a few of what they offer. To find out more, visit ccbbcyukon.com.
Ducks Unlimited Canada works with landowners and other conservation-minded partners to improve outcomes for communities and wildlife. Supporting vital ecosystems which contribute to water quality and quantity, soil health, support agriculture and economy, mitigate severe weather events, and provide opportunities for recreational access to nature. Together, we are unlimited. Learn more about programs and partnerships at ducks.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, Earth Systems, Human Development, Justice, and Science. Today, transgender rights versus women's rights, in the wake of a landmark British court ruling on what the words woman and sex mean. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Sex is complex, whether you're XY or XX. That was the title of a song by a Manitoba trio called The Welfare Starlets. This past week, the UK Supreme Court ruled that XY and XX aren't that complex at all, really. Under Britain's 2010 Equality Act, the court declared in a unanimous landmark decision, the terms woman and sex refer exclusively to a biological woman and to biological sex, not to transgender women, even those with so-called gender recognition certificates. The ruling delivers clarity and confidence to those who run hospitals, sports clubs, women's refuges, and other spaces reserved exclusively to people with two X chromosomes, the UK government responded. Others slammed it as a setback for transgender people, alongside gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and other non-binary folks. Trans folks are among the most marginalized and threatened members of society today, nowhere more so than in places like Uganda, Iran, and the United States, where being trans can get you killed. With me to talk about the UK Supreme Court's ruling and the complex connection between women's rights and transgender rights is Robert Wintemute. Wintemute is a professor of human rights law at King's College London, specializing in discrimination and sexual orientation law, human rights conflicts. His new book, Transgender Rights versus Women's Rights, From Conflicts to Coexistence, will be published at the end of May. We reached Robert Wintemute in London. Robert, can you introduce yourself? Tell me who you are.
I'm a Canadian trained lawyer. Grew up in Calgary, studied law in Montreal, practiced law in New York, did a doctorate in human rights law at the University of Oxford, and then moved to King's College London. I've worked on LGB, lesbian, gay, bisexual human rights cases since 1985, when I became the first openly gay lawyer at the Milbank Law Firm in New York. So I suppose I'm just celebrating 40 years of activism in that area. Been involved in a lot of cases in the European Court of Human Rights, a few in the Court of Justice of the European Union, and a few other courts around the world. So that's always been my specialty, LGB. And in the late 90s, LGB and T began to form a coalition. I recall at the time that wasn't clear to me what they had in common, but
LGB rights and trans rights.
Yeah. And But the political coalition was formed, and I just went along with it for many years. And it wasn't until 2018 that I experienced, actually, I was in a discussion about a conflict between transgender and women's rights in a teaching setting. And it was kind of a light bulb moment. And eventually I started talking to women more about their concerns and changed my opinion. And in 2021, I became a trustee of LGB Alliance, an NGO in the UK that promotes the rights of LGB people, but reserves the right to disagree with some transgender, let's say, demands of transgender rights activists, which in the LGBT world is high treason or blasphemy. So this group is often called an anti-trans hate group, which is not at all true, but that's what you will tend to find. So in any case, in my book, Chapter 8 has the title, Why Transgender Rights Are Not Like LGB Rights. So when it's published, if listeners, viewers want to read more about that, that's where they can find it. So this goes to explain why I agree with the outcome of the in the UK Supreme Court case on Wednesday.
Tell me about your response to the UK High Court's ruling. I gather you were surprised. You weren't anticipating it. Tell me about your response to the ruling.
Well, there's a legal debate as to how the law should have been clarified. So the Gender Recognition Act 2004, if you'll give me just 1 second to bring it up.
And you say something here, I'll give you a moment to pull that up, but you wrote, and we can talk more about this in a moment. I'm more interested in your immediate response to the UK court ruling, but you wrote, just as the term anti-Semitic has been unjustifiably widened to include any criticism of Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, the term transphobia has been unjustifiably widened to include any disagreement with any demand of the transgender rights movement. Interesting.
Yes, that is, I say, slightly separate topic from Wednesday's ruling.
Let's get back to that. I just threw that in to give you a few moments to pull up what you're trying to pull up. Yes. But I'm interested in your response to the High Court ruling.
Supreme Court.
Yeah, the Supreme Court.
Yeah, because the lower level is called the High Court. But, okay, Section 9 of the Gender Recognition Act 2004 says, when a full gender recognition certificate is issued, the person's gender becomes, for all purposes, the acquired gender. So that, if it is the female gender, the person's sex becomes that of a woman. So that's Section 9.1. Section 9.3 says, Section 9.1 is subject to provision made by this act, so any exceptions, and there was one for sport in the 2004 Act, or any other enactment. Okay, so basically the general rule, general principle is that the person born male who has a gender recognition certificate becomes female for all purposes, unless a later law makes some exception. So the question was, did the Equality Act 2010 make some kind of exception to override what the 2004 Act said? And it did not. There was no general provision saying sex for the purposes of this act means biological sex, notwithstanding the Gender Recognition Act 2004. There was no reference to the effect of a gender recognition certificate. But what you did find in the 2010 Act was pairs of exceptions. So you could exclude people based on their sex or their gender reassignment in specific situations. And this is particularly the case for sports. So it says, Section 195 of the Equality Act, that a person can be excluded because of their sex. So a person born male who remains legally male, does not have a gender recognition certificate, can be excluded on that basis because of sex.
From women's sports.
Women's sports, yes, right. But there's a second exception for which allows exclusion based because of gender reassignment. And reading those two together, what seemed to make sense was that under the Equality Act, a person born male with a gender recognition certificate was legally female. And so what the Equality Act was saying, yes, but your certificate does not count in women's sports. And that's the way I read the act. So,
And only women's sports, that's the only cutout.
well, there are other exceptions for single-sex services, which could include spaces for women only, etc. So there are various places in the Act where you have these pairs of exceptions, but they are missing in a few places. So there was a debate about, which is what started the case, positive action or affirmative action to increase representation of women. Well, in that context, is a person born male with a gender recognition certificate a woman? Okay, and that's what gave rise to the case. There's an also another ambiguity with regard to associations, and this was a particular concern of LGB Alliance, Scottish Lesbians, and the Lesbian Project, three groups that intervened in the case. So the question was whether an association of lesbian women could exclude a person born male with a gender recognition certificate. Now, this person would say, I identify as a woman, I am legally a woman, I am attracted to a woman, therefore I am a lesbian woman, and you cannot exclude me from your association. So one argument is that the 2010 Act did not make special provision, create a general exception, meaning that the gender recognition certificate did not have any effect under the 2010 Act. It made very specific exceptions, but it did so inconsistently, which created a bit of a legal mess. So the question became, how do we clean up this mess? One option was for the UK government to amend the Equality Act and introduce consistent exceptions, or they could have said sex in this act means biological sex. But the UK government was not keen to get involved because it's quite a politically sensitive issue. So the issue ended up before the UK Supreme Court. And they heard arguments from both sides. The Scottish government was saying it's clear that a gender recognition certificate does have effect under the Equality Act, subject to exceptions. And if that's to be changed, it has to be the UK Parliament that does it. The Equality and Human Rights Commission said the same thing. So, whereas there were arguments on the other side saying, no, this is a mess. There are all kinds of incoherence in the act because of the if a gender recognition certificate has a general effect. And the argument was no, sex means biological sex in this act. And that argument prevailed. And it did provide a very clean, tidy solution. It means there don't have to be amendments to the Equality Act. There don't have to be further cases about lesbian associations or other situations. But if you watch the video of the handing down of the judgment, it is really quite dramatic because the court says this. It acknowledges there are two sides in this debate, and it's been quite a fraught debate. And this judgment is going to displease one side, but they also caution it should not be seen as a victory for one side or the other. And as of that moment, you have no idea which side is going to win. And then they say sex means biological sex. And they had, right at the outset, it was Lord Reed, the president of the UK Supreme Court, who said that there should be no celebration when the actual decision is announced. And so everyone should remain quiet and respect the dignity of the court. So the celebration started only after the judges started to leave the courtroom.
I mean, as a man, my biological sex is male. I'm XY and I'm heterosexual. I respect the rights of all people, regardless of their sexual persuasion or orientation or gender identity or whatever. But for me, this is, to be perfectly honest, it's kind of like mind bending. It's difficult to wrap my head around some of the arguments. I can appreciate some of the arguments. It's hard not to appreciate the arguments, the human rights arguments in sexual orientation, gender identity questions. But it's not entirely clear to me why women who identify as women, who are biological women and see themselves as such, but are attracted to other women or are attracted to both men and women, would have difficulty being in the same location, kind of formally defined as the same-sex location, as somebody who's trans. It might seem obvious in cases like, you know, shower rooms and public toilets that says women on the door, or in sports. But can you explain this to me, Robert? Like, what the difficulty is for women of whatever kind of sexual persuasion to allow women, trans women, to be accepted as women with gender recognition certificates. Can you guide me through this? And I guess this kind of brings us to the LGB alliance, like why there'd be an LGB alliance, not an LGBTQ plus alliance, because we talk these days about LGBTQ plus, and there are various add-ons to that. But the LGB community is staking out a realm for itself. Can you explain this for me? It's complicated.
Several questions you've raised there. I mean, many women would just say, these people are not women. We respect them. We respect their general human rights. But first thing to note is that only a small percentage of what I call male-to-female transgender persons, which is an updated version of the terminology of the 1990s, which I would argue is clear and respectful. If you say trans women, a lot of people don't know what you mean. They'll say, is this a woman who wants to become a man? And no, it's the other way around. So yes, only a small minority have a gender recognition certificate, and only a minority have had genital surgery. The majority position is that the person born male remains legally male and has male genitals. And under the Gender Recognition Act 2004, you can be legally female exactly as you appear now in this video. You do not have to have any medical treatment whatsoever.
So a male who sees themselves as a female, they're a trans woman, they don't need to undergo surgery in order to be considered legally a woman.
Yes, this was so the European Court of Human Rights in 2002 ruled that the UK must have some kind of law allowing change of legal sex, but they said for post-operative transsexuals. And then in 2004, the UK Parliament jumped ahead and passed what was possibly the first law of its kind at the national level in the world, saying you could change your legal sex without any medical treatment. The only question is whether you have lived as a woman for 2 years before your certificate can be granted. Now, a big question of sincerity, but if you think you can live as a woman and have a beard, it's awkward to question that. So in theory, you could get a gender recognition certificate. So then you turn up at the Lesbian Association and you say, I'm a woman attracted to women. And the other women in the room will say, no, you're not. You're a man. So I'm talking about an extreme case, which might be fairly hypothetical, but we have other cases where a person has actually had surgery, takes hormones, and has a deep male-sounding voice and might be physically bigger than most of the women in the room, etc. So for a man, this is an issue like abortion. It's asymmetrical. Men will never be in the position of having an unwanted pregnancy. So we have to listen to women and put ourselves in their position, try to imagine what it's like.
And men simply have no right to challenge a woman's right to have an abortion because they're never going to get pregnant. That's the argument.
Well, the argument is that they have to take that into account when forming their opinion, that if they support a ban on abortion, they have to remember that this will never apply to them. And so if someone is, say, defending the right of male to female transgender persons to enter women-only spaces, they also have to, a man doing this has to remember that he will never be affected by this. So if we take the reverse situation, the female to male transgender person entering a men-only space, the vast majority of men would not be bothered at all. In sports, the person's at a disadvantage. If this person wants to stand naked in a men's communal shower room, they would not feel threatened. Most men would not feel threatened, etc. So,
but women would feel threatened by a trans woman with male genitalia and hair on their chest.
Yeah, especially in a changing room. And actually, I know a woman in London who had this experience of seeing male genitals in the women's changing room at a swimming pool. And I actually had the opposite experience recently of seeing female genitals in the male changing room. And so I could see I was in a very different position. I mean, this was a surprise to me, but it didn't really bother me in the way that it would possibly a woman in the reverse situation. There are many women who feel very strongly about this, and they fully support the UK Supreme Court's ruling. You mentioned...
I mean, these are situations where, you know, in public washrooms or in shower rooms at the YMCA or wherever, but, you know, but gyms where you go into the shower room, these are, well, they're potentially charged situations where some people get troubled and others don't get troubled, but they're far more consequential situations and scary situations, like transgender women who may not be recognized as women, and they're recognized under the law to be men actually, and they're sent to male prisons. They're incarcerated in a male penitentiary when they see themselves as women, and maybe they're in the course of undergoing, you know, a sex change.
Yeah.
And so this is really terrifying, or people in police custody.
Mm-hmm. Well, the argument here is that what is needed is third spaces. The chair of the Equality and Human Rights Commission in the UK made this argument on BBC Radio on Thursday morning. On Friday, Gabby Hinsliff in The Guardian made a comment on this, and she said, well, if that's the solution, then your organization should lead the campaign for these spaces. So I knew the director of Keep Prisons Single Sex in the UK, a woman, and there, I suppose the reaction of many women would be, yes, there's a problem, but do not solve it at our expense. So if the male-to-female transgender person is not safe in the male prison, well, then find a third space for them, but do not put them in our prison. And that's actually, there was a controversy in Scotland in relation to prisons, and the policy in England and Wales was changed so that if a person has male genitals or is being convicted of a sexual offense, they cannot be put in a female prison. In California, the law is the opposite, that a person with a male genitals has a right to be in a female prison if they identify as female. So there have been different approaches around the world. So I would say the problem is more significant in changing rooms, prisons, possibly hospital wards, situations where there's a possibility of being naked, of having visible genitals, etc. I don't think in day-to-day life it's such a significant problem in toilets, because many transgender people use them in a discreet way, are not challenged, etc. But it tends to be a question of how well they pass.
And here in the Netherlands, of course, you come across all the time, there's the men's room with an icon of a man on it, and the women's room with the icon of a woman on it, and they're kind of old-fashioned iconographics. Mm. And then there are washrooms that are omni.
Omni, yes.
Which are, it's interesting to see that, right? If you want to go into a public washroom and you've got absolutely no issue whether, you know, the person next to you is trans, then, you know, bless you. This is your space. Yeah. But if you're a woman who just wants to be going into a room with women, biological women of biological sex, or men, then that's your choice.
Well, that's a very practical solution, this third omni space, because it allows women who don't want to be there to go into the women's space, and it allows a transgender person to go into the omni space. Because their difficulty is if their appearance would tend to, well, it's the combination of clothing associated with women or hairstyle, etc., and but also some physical features that might seem male, which will potentially lead to them being harassed in the male space. So they need this third space. So I think that is really the way forward. And I'll just flag the issue we're going to come back to. But what I see in common with transgender rights versus women's rights and Israel-Palestine is a failure to consider the rights of others. What the UK Supreme Court has said on Wednesday is that the transgender rights movement has to consider the rights of others, meaning the majority of the population who are women, most of whom are not transgender. So there are practical problems, but there are also practical solutions.
But whereas in Israel-Palestine, there are some who say, you know, you can't go out and call Israel a genocidal apartheid regime and declare that, you know, Palestine shall be free from the river to the sea, or intifada, intifada, because it makes Jewish students feel uncomfortable and unsafe. And you've got to consider the rights of those people not to feel threatened. It's really slippery stuff.
Well, I mean, you have to consider the particular harms you're talking about. The main issue is racial discrimination practiced by Jewish Israelis against Palestinians. And that's the whole idea of providing a homeland for Jewish people at the expense of Palestinians. That's where the rights of others are being neglected. Now, the situation you mentioned, where there are political protests in favor of Palestinian rights that offend some Jewish people, make them feel uncomfortable, unsafe, that isn't necessarily a legitimate claim. Because in a free society with freedom of expression, you do not have a right not to be offended or not to be made to feel uncomfortable. And that's actually what there is in common with the, let's say, pro-Israel or Zionist movement and the transgender rights movement. They have both invoked this idea of